you know, by the different years, and there are stories in the middle.
How do you know how, like, reliable sources? No one knows exactly.
He didn't write exactly. He wrote Berach between this and this. Certain things he wrote unknown. You see that? And from the year 3638 to the year 1099, the total population of Jerusalem is unknown. And the Jewish population was small. So, it must have been really small. Because if it's less than 300 families, that's mighty small over there.
This is families, or this is small people?
Oh, people, right. That's 300 people, right.
Is there another
figure? Yeah, we got one more over there. So now we're going to... this is what Eretz Yisrael was, what it was like at these different periods, starting the year 6638. Now, before that, you know, that's right around the Churban HaBayis. We're like right around, so that's right around when there wasn't many Jews left in Israel because they were all, banished. So I would like to try to find for you when it was that the Ramban came to Israel. We were speaking about it last week, that the Ramban came to Eretz Yisrael. He wrote, there are two letters about Eretz Yisrael that are fascinating.
Did the Rambam ever go to Eretz Yisrael?
The Rambam, yes. As a matter of fact, he is buried here in Eretz Yisrael. Anyone know where? What? Tveria. The Rambam was in Eretz Yisrael, but he was chased out of Eretz Yisrael. He had to go to Egypt because he was being stalked. Well, many of the Kvarim that we have are controversial. Honestly, even I think Kever Rachel, I don't know if we're 100%, 1,000% positive that that's Kever Rachel. It sure looks like Kever Rachel, you know what I mean? It's got a big stone over there. Like, what's? I'm pretty sure that they don't have 100% Mesoira on everything. There was a Rav, and again, you could find all these things. You could find in this book who went around and based on Ruach HaKodesh from the Rizal. We're going to see some interesting stuff from the Rizal. It's like really, really funky stuff. That he said, okay, this is where he's buried. This is where he's buried, and he kind of like pointed out all the different kvarim where different people are buried. So I would like to try to find where the Ramban, when the Ramban came. I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it. But the Ramban wrote about coming back to Eretz Yisrael and how much he loved the land. He lived here. As a matter of fact, here it is. In the year 1267. You see that? So he was here during the Mamluk era, which is Egyptian. Over there, there was only like 300 Yidden, between 300 and 2,000 Yidden in Yerushalayim. The Ramban came here, and he wrote about Eretz Yisrael. I could read you what he wrote in its translation, but... What can I tell you about the land? The desolation is everywhere, and the destruction is so great. The guiding principle is, the holier the place, the greater the destruction. Jerusalem was devastated the most, next Yehuda, and next the Galilee. But he writes, even amongst the destruction, you could still see the beauty of the land. There's another fascinating description of Eretz Yisrael written by a guy, an author by the name of Mark Twain. Have any of you ever heard of Mark Twain? Mm-hmm. Indeed. Mark Twain wrote some very famous books, for example. You remind me of Huckleberry Finn. And any other book that he wrote? No.
Whoa.
Those are the only two books you know, is that what you're saying? Tom Sawyer. He wrote a book called Tom Sawyer. Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn. So anyway, Mark Twain was a fascinating person. He was fascinated by the Jewish people in general. He came to Israel and he wrote about how, you know, terrible the land, not how terrible the land is, what terrible state the land is in, and how no one's able to cultivate the land and it's desolate. And anyway... So this is, so the Ramban was really the first one. There's a shul in the old city called the Ramban Shul. Does anyone know where it is? Right? Underneath the Churba is the Ramban Shul. It is called that because the Ramban davened there. That's where the Ramban was. So we see, take a look at, if you look at your population, Jewish population of Jerusalem, we are slowly growing here in Jerusalem. Starting from the Mamluk era, in the year 1250, from 300 families, 2,000, 5,000, 10,000, 32, 50. Well, then we got a little bit of a knot over there. What?
Is it family?
Or people, I don't know if it's family. Population, right, population. The year of 1996, we're up to 420,000. By now, we're way above that as Yerushalayim, Baruch Hashem. It keeps on getting bigger and bigger, Baruch Hashem. I guess this book was written around the year 1996.
Around how much are we at?
What?
Around how much?
I don't know the number. I really don't know. I can just guess if you want me to. Guess? 750.
So?
Yeah, in Yerushalayim. Yeah. That's my guess. Okay, now I want to read some stuff over there. I'm going to tell you these stories. These are amazing stories. Now, these stories, by the way, are from books. He's going to write where the sources are, and these are not recent books. These are books written, you know, tens of years ago, maybe hundreds of years ago. And the sources are definitely credible. But let's first go. I want you to look for a second at the end of the century. We're talking about over here. About 16th century, Reb Chaim Vital and Reb Bezalel Ashkenazi. These are two very important personalities. Has anyone ever heard of either one of them?
Who?
Reb Chaim Vital, you've heard of.
And who?
Reb Bezalel Ashkenazi. Reb Bezalel Ashkenazi is fascinating. He is probably one of the most utilized of people from his generation. He is the person that put together and authored something called the Shita Mekubetzes. We all have used Shita Mekubetzes. Everyone uses Shita Mekubetzes more than any other, you know, kind of like Pirish, because he puts everything together. Anyway, Reb Chaim Vital is a Talmud of the Arizal. Now, what's fascinating about the Arizal and others like him is the Arizal passed away at an extremely young age. Does anyone know how old Arizal was?
33.
I believe he was 38. He was either 38 or 42. He was right 2 years off of 40. Now, what's fascinating was he had a mechutin. His mechutin's name was Rabbi Yosef Cairo. Does anyone know who that is?
Yep.
What did he write? Beis Yosef, Kesef Mishnah. And he was the Shulchan Aruch. So, like this. Rabbi Yosef Cairo made a shidduch with Arizal. And he wrote, after the shidduch, he made a beautiful shidduch for his son, whatever. And he says, he feels bad because he could tell that the neshama of his mechutin is too high, and Hashem is going to be taking him from this world soon. Like, it's like he doesn't belong here. He's like, and that's what happened immediately afterwards. So the Arizal is like from a whole different place, mamish, not normal. Does anyone know what the Arizal's name was? It's called the Arizal, not because there's no Arya over there. It's Adonenu Rabbeinu Yitzchak. Last name was Luria. Rabbi Yitzchak Luria. So here we are. Let's read a little bit. Reb Chaim Vital was his prime disciple. Two celebrated Torah personalities lived in Yerushalayim during the end of the 16th century. One was Reb Chaim Vital, the other one was Reb Bezalel Ashkenazi. Does anyone know where the Arizal is buried?
Tzvas.
So we got to figure out what's going on over here. If the Arizal is in Tzvas and Reb Chaim Vital is here in Yerushalayim, how they get together? It wasn't like today, we just take a car. It was weeks to travel by camel. You know what I mean? And there's no road, so you're traveling over like hills and through, you know, it's not like you just take a road. Reb Chaim Vital was a native of Tzvas. He began his Torah career as a disciple of Rav Moshe Alshich. Now, the Alshich is a very famous Pirish on Navi and on other things. He's also there buried in Tzvas, who granted him ordination. This is also fascinating that smicha, we don't have smicha nowadays. You might call Rabbi Wiener and say that he has smicha, but our smicha is really just a shadow of what smicha used to be. Smicha was a serious, serious thing. And back in the day, there was something called real smicha, which means that they were able to give someone a fine. They were able to, like, give people malchus and things like that. We don't do that anymore, none of that stuff. Knas, there's no real smicha. But somehow in Tzfas, there was a time in Tzfas. They got smicha. I don't know what they did with their smicha, I'm not sure, but they reinstituted smicha. I don't know how they did it. They reinstituted smicha, did not go. They got shut down. Now, there was one incident that happened in Tzfas that decimated the community. Any of you familiar with that? Tzvas experienced a earthquake. And when that earthquake happened, the entire community was destroyed. I mean, there were survivors, but a lot of people were killed. And they discussed that perhaps it was because Hashem wasn't happy about the smicha thing. Perhaps there was friction between Tzvas and Yerushalayim, which maybe we'll get to if we can. Maybe they wasn't happy about that. Hashem was not happy about something. And a lot of people in Tzvas, a lot of shuls in Tzvas, a lot of stuff in Tzvas just was totally destroyed. And that was the end. But at the time, Tzvas was like, I'm going to say Lahavdil. Today we have Bnei Brak, and Bnei Brak's like, whoa, you know, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, the Stipler, Baron Leib Steinman, Reb Shach, you got all those big people in Bnei Brak. Tzvas was back in the day, was the big place outside of Yerushalayim. That was the big place. So there, Reb Chaim Vital was there. His Rebbe was Reb Moshe Alshich, who gave him smicha, who himself received smicha from Reb Yosef Kairoy. In the early 20s, Reb Chaim studied Kabbalah under Reb Moshe Cordovero. Reb Moshe Cordovero is known as the Ramak. The Ramak is also buried in Tzvas. There's one little corner. It is like literally Millionaire's Row over there. Like the Alshich, the Shlomo Alkabitz, the Cordovero, like all like bang, bang, bang. It's like, it's unbelievable. Right? Maybe we'll get to Shlomo Alkabitz if we can. The Ramak is one of the most prolific Kabbalists. Wrote the Sefer Asaras Mamorim or other many different. That was, I think, one of his most famous. Anyway, he's a brilliant mystic who lived in the city until his death shortly after the arrival of the Rizal. Yeah. When Reb Moshe Cordovero died, he died in Tamiz in the year 1570. Reb Chaim became the disciple of Reb Yitzchak Luria, otherwise known as the Arizal, who initiated him in the deepest secrets of Kabbalah. And here it goes. In fact, the Rizal made it clear that his only reason for moving to Tzvas was in order to reveal all that he knew to Reb Chaim Vital. In other words, he was somehow informed that there's a person who is going to be his prime disciples in Tzvas. Reb Chaim Vital was in Yerushalayim, moved to Tzvas. The Rizal was in Yerushalayim, moved to Tzvas. Found Reb Chaim Vital, made him into his Talmud. Reb Chaim was then to have the sole responsibility for recording and disseminating his master's teaching. After his mentor passed away in 1572, Reb Chaim Vital spent the next 50 years committing the Arizal's writings to the Arizal's teachings to writings. Okay? Okay. He writes on the bottom that you have the similar thing like the Zohar. Who's the person that wrote the Zohar? Kind of, but not really. A lot of it was his Talmidim. Some people say actually the day that he gave them the Zohar was on, according to many people, like for example, Rabbi Yaakov Hillel. Any of you have heard of Rabbi Yaakov Hillel?
Yep.
He's a big Kabbalist that lives right around the corner in the building next to me. What?
Speaking to
tonight?
Yeah.
Okay. Rabbi Yaakov Hillel is of the opinion, based on a lot of research, that Lag BaOmer was not the day that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai passed away. It was the day that he revealed the Zohar to his Talmidim. They committed it to writing. Some of it he wrote, some of it he calls them the Chevra, the Chevraya, some of them they wrote. A particular, he has one particular Talmud called Rev Abba that did a lot of the writing. Anyway, so too Reb Chaim Volozhin was in charge of writing over his Talmid, his Rebbe's work. Similarly, you also have the writings of Baal Shem Tov didn't write, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov didn't write, the Vilna Gaon didn't write. A lot of the big like minds, so they were teaching. The Talmidim were trying to commit it down to paper. Okay, let's turn over for a second to the other side. At least twice during the last decades of the 16th century, Reb Chaim Vital lived in Yerushalayim. Sometime after the passing of the Arizal, he moved to Yerushalayim and lived there until 1576. Okay. Now, let's skip now to the next paragraph. This is interesting. Reb Chaim Vital's saintliness and superior character was recognized by everyone. And despite his personal modesty and humility, his fame spread until even the Goyim knew of this holy man. When the new Turkish governor named Abu Sipin arrived in Yerushalayim in the mid-1580s, he sought to increase the city's water supply. This has always been a problem in Yerushalayim. because we're nowhere near water. Like tashlich is pretty lame in this city. We do tashlich by my fish tank because there's no water here. It's always been a problem in Yerushalayim. What do we do about water? There's no wells. What? There's no water under there. There's no water. They dig. There's a little well like in Arzi Abiro. There's like no water there. You know, it's got like a well with no water. But it's very hard to find water here. So it was at the time, the person who was in charge, the Turkish governor, his name was Abu Sipin, and he wanted to increase the water source, and he knew there's something called the Shiloach Spring, Mei Shiloach, that was used by the Beis HaMikdash. It was in the area of the Beis HaMikdash, Shiloach Spring. It was sealed in the time of the first temple by the Melech Chizkiyo, when the city was under the siege of Sancheirif. So it's there, we just don't know where it is. We now have Mei Shiloach, you could go, by the way. You could go, you could walk, there's waters, it's on the right outside of Yerushalayim. I don't know how safe it is right now because Arabs and whatever, but it's a popular, they know where it is, yeah.
Where is it?
It's outside, and like,
it's like a lake, what is it?
No, it's a tunnel with water in it. You're walking through a tunnel with water, it's called the Mei Shiloach. You could,
A lot of water, or it's like a little bit?
It can go up to your waist, I think. It goes up to your waist. But it's like this wide, the whole thing.
It's
How long is it? I don't know. You guys want to go?
Yeah.
No. Lena, we'll try to make it happen, okay? We'll try to make it happen. Okay, anyway. So Abu Sipin wants to open up this spring. So he was told that Reb Chaim Vital is a very saintly person and he knows all different types of things that people don't know. So he gave the Jew an ultimatum. Either you open the spring or I kill you. The Goyim do that a lot, by the way. They did the same thing. You'll see other stories here if you want. Like, you know, if it doesn't rain, we kill you. So the Jews had to, like, daven and it rained. Like, that's the way they get things done. So if you don't open the spring or I kill you. For reasons unknown to us, Reb Chaim Vital did not want to open the spring. So and decided instead to leave the city. It's not easy to get out of a walled city. It was a walled city at the time. He somehow made it out. Mysterious, but it happened. Incidentally, Abu Sipin, according to Gentile accounts, earned the epithet of the witch in human form due to his behavior towards Jewish subject. He was not a nice person. Okay, we're going to get back to Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi. I want to read you this unbelievable story. This story is from the book called Shem HaGdolim. I think Shem HaGdolim is actually even written by the Chidah. No, this is written by a very famous Talmud Chacham. Okay, what happened over here with Abu Sipin? You know that story just told you about it? Well, somehow Reb Chaim Vital managed to escape the locked city without anyone knowing where he was. That night, he was already in Damascus. Reb Chaim Vital fell asleep. And in his dreams... What? It's pretty far, yeah. Well, listen to this. In his dreams, his master, the Arizal, came and scolded him. Why didn't you open the spring? Don't you know that the governor is none other than a reincarnation of Sancheirif? Abu Sipin in Arabic means the father of destruction. Cheirif means destruction. And attached to your soul is a spark of the soul of Chizkiyahu. So you are a reincarnation of Melech Chizkiyahu. He's a reincarnation of Sancheirif. The same exact confrontation happening. You were presented with an opportunity to rectify an error which the Chazal say that Chizkiyahu made. You had a chance to rectify this error. By doing so, you would have ushered in the beginning of the Geula Shlema.
So why didn't you do it?
So Reb Chaim Vital said, I didn't do it because the only way to do it was to use the Shema Mefoirish, special Shema of Hashem. I didn't want to use the Shema of Hashem. To which the Arizal answered, I would have agreed with you not to use it. But tell me, how did you get to Damascus? Oh, you used the Shema Hashem, so you're going to use the Shema anyway. So you should have used the Shema to open the spring.
What did he say?
So Reb Chaim Vital answered, okay, so I'll go back and I'll go open the spring. Too late. Shem HaGdolim, I believe it's from the Chidah.
So what was he thinking?
That's a spooky
what
story.
What was Chaim thinking? Why did he use it?
That much of the conversation it doesn't say, but that's a story. I want to tell you some other spooky stories over here. I just want to whet your appetite. What? You like spooky stories? Okay, here we go. I'm going to spook you out. This book, ladies and gentlemen, it's a nice long book. You don't have to read the whole thing. It's like, it's caught up
in... Spooky stories?
No. Most of the book is history. Every different chapter of history, it gives stories. Not all of them are spooky, but this is a nice spooky one. Here it goes. David HaMelech, David HaMelech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim. Har Tzion. We were there. Mm-hmm. Here it goes. This is spooky. Now, I want to tell you, as a side note, there's other spooky stories that happened right there on Har Tzion that I was told about different people disappearing in different situations.
Nowadays?
Recently, yeah. Yeah, pretty recently.
That's
who went Friday. Here it goes. Har Tzion is revered as the site of David HaMelech and all of the Malchus based David, that they're all buried there somewhere in Har Tzion. They're not 100% certain. Some people are like, I'm positive. Some people are like, not sure. Where is Har Tzion? It's a little bit elusive. It's a lot of a debate, exactly. But here's a story about someone named Rav Binyamin of Toledo. Rav Binyamin of Toledo wrote a story. The name of the book is Masas Rav Binyamin. And the story goes as follows. This is in the year 1170. Who was in control of Jerusalem in the year 1170?
British.
British! And the Christians were constructing a kind of platform for the church in Har Tzion. Now, Har Tzion is a very important place for Christians. Does anyone know why? They claim that the Last Supper, before...
Oh yeah, I saw those signs all
before
over.
Before we kill them. What?
They had signs there, like...
Now, right now, there's a tremendous, tremendous power struggle going on. Because
like
there's very substantial reports that the Israeli government is going to give Har Tzion to the Christian Church. What?
Why?
For two reasons. They're being offered. The Christian Church has literally an unlimited amount of money. They have things that are in the church which they own, precious metals and things that there is no price tag for. The church is
they own a ton of
money.
What?
Ain't about the money. It's our place
for the Israeli government. I guess it's for, if you're talking about a few $100 million for an Israeli, for a teeny little government, that's a lot of money. And aside for that, the Pope is promising that he's going to come visit.
Who?
The Pope. So, what happens when the Pope comes visits?
Tourism.
What's tourism?
Money.
More money. Money, money, money. So if you give us this property, we're going to bring tons, millions and millions of tourists. They're going to flood the country.
Don't they have any
Someone just visits.
They own a ton of stuff there.
His wife didn't want to shake his
They own a ton of stuff in the area, yeah. They own a lot of stuff in general in Israel.
His wife didn't want to shake his hand or something.
Whose wife? No, there is a representative of the Prime Minister, is a Haredi, her name is Rabbits, and the Pope, they bowed to her. That's what they said.
Because she didn't want to bow to him.
Anyway, so right now, that Har Tzion where we were is a very hot spot. It was flared up last year, Shavuos time, 2 years ago, Shavuos. People aren't talking about it, but the people that are behind the scenes are saying that the deal's already been secured and it's going to end up passing hands. There's already areas in that part where Jews are not allowed to go. You're not allowed to go into it. It's like you're not allowed. Jews are not allowed to go because they're trying to pass it on.
Jews in there.
I don't know how much they're giving over. If they're giving over the entire thing,
are you allowed to go in there?
It's on top of David HaMelech's kever. Yeah, it's going to be a church. So,
are we allowed to go in there if that's the
case? Very possibly. Well, so I think there are people trying to get in to make it not into a church. If it becomes a church, then you can't. But it's not yet a church. If someone comes into your shul and starts davening, starts holding services for Christianity, it's not, it's still a shul. Get out of my shul, right? So it could be that until it's
massive war, like tons of guys that are charged.
Could be. There was discussion about it. 2 years ago, we went to David HaMelech's kever, kind of like to. They asked us to come and bring as many boys as we can to kind of like stake claim to Har Tzion. Anyway, Kitzer, so at the time, the Christians are building a church. They're building a platform for the church, and. Oh boy, it's late. I'll tell you this one story. I got so much more to tell you. And listen to this, what happened. The platform collapses. So the church patriarch called over one of his friars and said, you have to rebuild it. And you have to use stones. So take stones from the wall. There was a wall there. Take the stones, because the wall anyway wasn't being used. And rebuild the... Okay, so he got his workers and they started pulling the stones out of the wall.
Western wall?
No, the wall of Har Tzion. Har Tzion is outside of the old city. There's walls there. We passed them. And all of a sudden, they pull a stone away, and they see behind the stone a tunnel. Well, They saw the tunnel. They crawl inside the tunnel because they hope maybe they find some money or something. They become rich, right? So these two workers go into the tunnel.
They can't come back out.
And they eventually make it out. They found themselves in an entrance to a chamber built with marble pillars that was overlaid with silver and gold. Before them, they saw a gold table with a golden scepter and a crown resting on it. So that was the kever of David HaMelech. To the left, they saw the kever of Shlomo HaMelech. Then they saw the kever of the crown of all the other kings of Israel.
Why can we go in there?
Gather. That's what they saw. They didn't go in yet. Gathering their courage, they stepped into the room. Suddenly, a turbulent wind struck them down to the ground and knocked them unconscious until nightfall. Then when they woke up, they heard a voice screaming, "Arise and get out of here at once!" They scrambled out of the cave as fast as they can. Petrified in a state of shock, they dashed to the Christian patriarch and told him everything that happened. Realizing that this was an ancient Jewish site, he called over of Avram HaChassid, who was then the elder of Yerushalayim, and told them everything that happened.
Isn't that enough for a priest sees this, right? Like, yo.
No. So listen to this.
What we're doing. Yeah.
After hearing the Arab story, Rabbi Avram said, "The cave is the burial place of King David HaMelech. Tomorrow we will go there with the Arabs and see for ourselves." The next morning, Rabbi Avram and the patriarch went to the two workers, waited for the two workers to arrive. When they failed to arrive, they sent the messenger to bring them. The messenger returned and reported that they found them lying dead in their beds. To which Rabbi Avram said, "This is a message from Hashem. He does not want anyone going in. Let's just close this up and put it to rest." That was the end of the story.
Good luck sleeping tonight.
So,
by the way, guys, we were there.
That's where we were. Now, I want to be honest with you. I was one time, and maybe if any of you are really, really good, so then I'll bring you there. I went down, all the way down, so there's a place underneath where we are. We're at, like, Kever David, right? That's not Kever David. Kever David is underneath that, underground. And it's locked up, there are keys, and you could go down, and you have to go through this little tunnel, and you got to climb down and go inside, and you can go to a place. No. Just, it's a wall there. It's just
right
a wall.
You know where it is.
Again, I don't know what, where, you know, it is... Anyway, we continue with more. Bezrat Hashem, have a...